and kind of a nice temperature today. I didn't walk outside and step on ice crystals. Good morning again. This is Elizabeth and Aaron from We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. So this morning we've got, again, Aaron and Elizabeth. We have Chandler, who is our engineer and gets up bright and early every Sunday morning with us. And we've got Nate, who is in training and will be working here at KCNR
so that means,
in the near future.
If Chandler's working the engineer job, then that means, Nate, you're either shoveling coal or pulling up the caboose. Your choice.
Yeah, one or the other.
We're going to be, we're in the dining car? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, pretty much.
Just hanging out
and
chatting.
Although I have yet to see anybody bring us a cup of coffee, but we'll get to that. Well, our husbands are out in the other room, so maybe they're listening and they'll do that. Anyway, this show is brought to you by some of our fabulous sponsors, True Patriots. We have our dear friend Damsel, and she knows who she is. We have North State Consultants, Mark Kent and his wife, Linda, and his sister, Linda, over on East Cypress are tax folks, and they do more than just do your taxes. They know tax law pretty well over there, and they actually help you keep your money. So instead of going in and being told how much you have to pay, you go in and they tell you how much you don't have to pay.
Yeah, there's two ways to do taxes.
Yeah.
The one way is, you know, Let's find everything that you owe, and the other one is let's find everything you have to pay.
So
different.
Really, really good folks over there for that, and their telephone number is 221-0101, so give them a call. I know that they'd love to hear from you. We also have Jim and Nancy Myatt. Now, these folks are your typical American story of ingenuity and innovation. They created what is called All-Temp Tactical Lube, and that is a little tiny bottle of cleaner and lubricant for, I mean, it was designed for the military. You know, they're in situations over there where they don't have time to you know, have their guns jam and not run smooth. It's pretty important that it goes right every time.
The big thing, the reason Jim put that together was he invented this stuff, and all of you people that are sitting out there going, oh, it's probably silicone. No, it's not silicone. It's not a bunch of other stuff you think it is, because it says that on the bottle, and Jim doesn't tell you what it is because it's a secret formula.
It's like a secret recipe.
It is a secret recipe, and he made it because the military is dealing with really low temperatures and very high temperatures, neither of which are good for metal. Really. Mm-hmm. And, you know, weapons were jamming and different things like that. But for the rest of us out here in the big world, we just have keys that stick in our locks.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got a lot.
And
there's
how
lot
many,
of stuff.
How many have their garage door openers get stuck on the rails? I'm going to go home today and use it on that, actually.
Yeah, we're the best experiment in town. So
this stuff is pretty fabulous. And they've got a special going. If you buy a bottle, which is worth 500 applications for $39.95 or $39.99, they will send an additional two bottles along with that third bottle overseas to military personnel that you designate. So buy one, get three, and all three go overseas. And I want to give you an 800 number for Jim and Nancy Myatt, 800-301-0046. And they also have a website, and I believe
it's alltemptacticallube.com. The easy way to figure all this stuff out is to go to readingteaparty.com. And when you go there, click on Radio Show along the top blue bar. You don't have to be a user of the website. You don't have to log into it or anything. Just readingteaparty.com, click on Radio Show. When you go there, you're going to see the information on the show today. You'll see archives for previous programs. You'll see our call-in number, which is 530-605-4567. And you will see the advertisements on the right.
So everything you need
North
to
State
know.
North State Tax, All-Temp Tactical Lube. Mm-hmm. You'll see some other good stuff there. So we try to make that really relevant and useful for you, and it's up all the time.
So there you go.
There you have it.
So we've been talking quite a bit about private property rights. In fact, that's pretty much our focus at this particular moment. And before we get into that, though, we've got Gary on line one.
We have
a pre-caller. Early. Yeah,
pre-caller.
Most people wait till the last minute, and Gary decided to call at the beginning of 2 hours. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning, ladies. How are you?
Great.
Super.
Aaron, you're connected with LaMalfa's office now, right?
Correct.
Now, do you physically go to Sacramento, or is it all computer and you stay up here?
I was physically in Sacramento on
okay, great. That
whatever
important
day it was,
okay.
Thursday.
For you to take to Sacramento, Here's the slogan, Sacramento goes to school, or you could change it to legislature goes to school. And everything is connected to school. For instance, California legislature session should be 9 months or 10 months, just like schools. So they can have the summer off to become educated or work in the real world. Reduce their salaries and expenditures. I think they've reduced school funding about 20% by now. I'm not absolutely sure. But whatever the percentage is, they receive the same percentage cut as the schools. No cell phones because teachers don't have cell phones.
I think Jerry just just hammered that one. I don't know who had to turn theirs in, but what did they say, like 48,000 cell phones?
My question is, not half, none. And my question is, why is it taking until June to get rid of the cell phones? I mean, why?
If they make a decision about state supported, they can buy their own cell phones. Like the rest of the people.
Yeah, I don't know.
And the same thing,
because they can.
No state cars. Hold on, I'm not finished.
No, there's more.
No state cars. Okay, let them take care of their own, and they can pay for their own supplies like a lot of the K through 6 teachers do. We all know for sure they buy their own supplies, and no, it's not all tax deductible because they spend more. So let them pay for their own. Okay, I'm not finished. Sacramento can determine their salaries. They, just like teachers, they can be paid on a 9 month or a 12 month. That doesn't change the grand total, their gross, but if they can't budget their money, then they'd have to be paid on a 12 month, and if they can budget their money and take it bigger lumps and then invest it or whatever, and pay them on a 9 month. But
same money, just the spread.
That's right. Okay. Whatever they want to. But you see, this is the reason I'm mentioning this is because so far all we've heard as the big one here, the license fees, the automobile license fees, need to be extended, or that will be a $3 million hit to the sheriff's department here, right, et cetera, et cetera. In all of this rhetoric, there is not one mention of any reductions other than the cell phones. There's no monetary, and life just goes on wonderfully, like nothing has ever happened in Sacramento. And I think we need to, before anything is considered, let's hear what cuts are coming across 10%, 20% on the budgets, etc. And that's why I say let's attach it to the schools, because that's an easy one to remember. Every time you cut the schools, okay, we cut the legislature, put them on the same schedule, because we definitely don't need a legislature 12 months out of the year, but I think a 9 or a 10 reduction.
So okay, we can go on a school theme.
Yes.
Well, Gary.
Sacramento needs to be educated to the real world.
Well, I can tell you that, do you live here in Redding?
Yes. I'm a Tea Party member, too.
Well, there you have it. Well, then I guess I should tell you that Monday night, Senator LaMalfa will be at our meeting.
Okay.
Unrelated to the attendance of the ACLU coming to explain about the library thing.
And just for our listeners out...
Speaking of attendance, and I know you'll bring it up, Tuesday night is City Council meeting, and we need a lot of bodies there.
Absolutely, to talk about the...
So the
charter city
can see that the people are interested in this charter city and want more information about it.
Good call. There's a lot going on. I mean, bottom line is, for all those people who haven't plugged into the Tea Party or the concept of,
right,
it's not too late.
Yep.
I'll see you Monday night, and you know who I am.
There you go.
I talk with you often. All right, take
Thanks,
care.
Gary.
Thank you very much for a good show, ladies.
Thanks for calling early.
And for those that are listening, we do meet every Monday night without fail at 6 o'clock at the Bonneview Baptist Church.
All right, the way this is going to go is we're going to take a swift little commercial break here, and when we come back, we are going to be chatting with Bill Dennison. He's a very interesting man. I think you guys are going to have a great time listening to this program. And if you have questions, again, please don't wait till the last 2 seconds. You can reach us at 530-605-4567. You are listening to KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
By the Redding Tea Party, if you want to give us a call, the number is 530-605-4567. If you want to chat or you want to listen to us streaming live, go to reddingteaparty.com, look for the blue button at the top of the page that says radio show, click on that, and there we are. And you don't have to be a member of that website or log into it to listen to the show via the reddingteaparty.com.
Absolutely. All right, here we go. I said absolutely again. My husband said I say absolutely too much. He's out there going, yeah.
And he's really absolute about that.
Sorry, I have this crappy cold. It's just, it's hard to focus. You know, I wanted to do a little introduction for Bill. He is a former Plumas County supervisor. He got his Bachelor of Science degree from the University of California, Berkeley in 1959. As a California licensed forester, worked as a logger in his younger years, and then for Diamond Match Company as a surveyor. He's a resident forester, road construction manager, forest engineer. He did all that until 1971, and he was employed as vice president of timber sales services by Western Timber Association. He was elected president in 1980, and WTA merged with what you might remember out there, California Forest Protective Association, in 1988. And hadn't worked in the California Forest Association until, I don't know, oh, yeah, here it goes, 1994. So Bill's got a long history in the logging and timber industry. Lots of interest in private property. He's somebody that keep in touch with a lot over email and those sorts of things. And helped with the Alliance for Environment and Resource that branched into groups called the Shasta Alliance for Resource Environment, SHARE. Also, the Klamath Alliance for Resource and Environment. You guys will recognize that one. The Klamath Alliance for Resource and Environment is also the organization that Danielle Lindler works with. Danielle was the one who was on our program about monuments. And if you're not sure what monuments are, I want you to go to the Redding Tea Party, click on Radio Show, and I want you to look at last week's program and the week before. You can learn all about the monument situation. So you'll see a link there for CARE, Klamath Alliance for Resource and Environment. Bill, why don't you jump in at this point and give us the last part of this and a little roadmap for where we're going with you this morning.
Good morning, you, Aaron and Elizabeth, and also
good morning,
listeners. I really appreciated the pre-show, the show sponsors as an example. It's their businesses that make our world go around, and I was intrigued by the lubrication
product. And I'm going to say it for Aaron, absolutely.
In addition, the energetic conversation already this morning.
I know. pretty good for 8 o'clock.
We should lack no conversation as the time goes on, and I really hope that listeners will contribute to this, ask questions, comments, ask questions that they think need clarification. But as an opener, Aaron, I probably should let you know that my statements will not purposely be concerned about political correctness, as we've learned the term recently, nor do I plan to bash other groups. There's no need for that. But my intent is to present facts and my personal opinions based on facts as I've researched them over the years. Political correctness, the reason I mentioned that was apparently engineered by commentators and news shows in an attempt to not offend anyone. And certainly, it's not necessary to offend, but it's our obligation to defend our private property rights, access to federal lands, our republic, and our U.S. Constitution. And it's difficult, I think, because right now, for us to concentrate on those things without being too discouraged. So my message is one of hope and success, but like the trials of life, we have to also first understand the problem. And so, again, I would ask that you and Elizabeth interject anything you might have as we go along in this conversation.
Why, thank you. We have no opinions.
Yeah, we have no.
We definitely have opinions.
I know that the people who listen to this program, I think we all realize that political correctness, that began to substitute for a word that my mom used all the time. She would say, when I was going to go do something or I wanted to be part of something, my mom would say, well, honey, you have to be discriminating.
And we no longer use that word because it somehow has lost its meaning and gotten merged in with discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
But being discriminating meant that not everything was okay. You had to make choices. Certain things were good, other things were bad. And we no longer draw those distinctions. It seems that it's not okay to say something is bad. I'm not sure where we stopped evaluating, well, but we've made it not okay to talk about that.
And I think we're right on the verge of going way too far with political correctness, because in a nutshell, what happens is that anything is okay, and you have to accept everything that anyone does. And that's just downright dangerous, in my opinion.
Yes, and that's the reason I started this out, to recognize the fact that that we have to use the truth and base it on that, but not be beating around the bush, I guess, to bring these facts to the front. And again, as I said, I wanted to be sure that we have a positive outlook on what we're talking about. The title that I kind of used is Private Property Rights, Going, But Not Gone. And that not gone part is our hope, I think, mm-hmm. and the strategy upon which we must build as we move forward. So the purpose of today will be to stimulate public interest in the erosion of private property rights and ask for action from listeners, even though they may believe that they have not yet been impacted. Some of them don't realize the impacts are already there before them. One of the problems that I see is that there are so many distractions. They've been deemed as emergencies, and they have citizens confounded and unable to think about the long-term consequences on our freedom and the Republic. In many cases, the losses are small, or so they'd seem, incremental federal control on our lives. But these changes often occur during emergencies, and we've seen examples of these emergencies over the past 3 or 4 or 5 years. Examples, 9/11, the Obama health care, stimulus bills, General Motors takeover, climate change, energy bills, amnesty bill, border control, rising costs and economic collapse, Iran's threat to all nations, terrorism, and national security. These are all emergencies that affect every one of us in one way or another. At the same time, we rightfully worry about the immediate needs of our families. We struggle for their savings and investments. Should we put our money into gold and silver if we have any left? Or should we bury it in the backyard? What's a safe place for the future?
Very uncertain.
Gordon?
We live in very uncertain times.
Mm-hmm. And uncertainty affects everything, from individuals to businesses. We can't live on uncertainties. We have to have some answers. At the same time, too many have to worry about their ability to find employment and rely on unemployment insurance. Too many have no income right now. You know, as you look around, you find more and more people just have lost their one and two incomes from their family. And it's the first time that they've been desperate to pay their mortgages, their utility, and their food bills. So it's truly a desperate time for most every U.S. citizen. So it's no wonder that under that background, that many people cannot find the time nor interest in preserving private property rights. I guess you'd say they see little reason to become involved in battles over U.S. Constitution rights because they're fighting for economic and social survival right this minute. But I think, Aaron and Elizabeth, it's during these times that we should review some historical facts that show the difficulties that will be encountered in our fight to preserve private property rights, our open access to federal lands, preserve our United States Republic, and the U.S. Constitution of today. And the statement that I want to quote should whet our appetite for future vigilance. As example, Grant Jeffrey, in his book Shadow Government, referenced the War Atlas, which is a military study, and noted, quote, as a result of history dangers to national security, most nations have joined alliances to protect themselves, end of quote. This is one of the tools being utilized by Agenda 21, a group that we may have the opportunity to discuss later. Another quote by German philosopher George Hegel in the 1800s. But he theorized that, quote, by planning and actually producing crisis, leaders gain enormous power by stepping in and promising solutions, end of quote. You recall, who read history or actually lived through it, this was in fact what Hitler was able to accomplish. The Hegel philosophy and the actions are supported today by socialists in general, and again, Agenda 21 advocates in particular. In the 1970s, theologian Franz Schaeffer described our world as history indicates that at a certain point of economic breakdown, people cease being concerned with individual liberties and are ready to accept regimentation, end of quote. My favorite, of course, along those lines is Ayn Rand, who wrote Atlas Shrugged and many other books. And in Atlas Shrugged, Rand stated, human rights cannot exist without private property rights. To deny private property rights means to turn men into property owned by the state.
And before you leave Ayn Rand, for those of you that have never read Atlas Shrugged, you have missed one of the quintessential works of our time. It was written in 1957. And if you would like to read a fictional account of what's actually happening on the news, if you'd like it in story form, Atlas Shrugged is your book.
You'll be shocked at how closely it parallels exactly what we're going through today.
You're right. And, you know, I hadn't read it in high school as many I've been forced to do. I learned about it by a person who said I should get the book, so I started reading on the way to Washington, D.C. one trip, or I finished it, I guess, on the way back. And when I got out of the plane, I called 9 people, many of them in the Reading area, and said, you know, we got to talk about this. This is really something. And so we met the following weekend and talked about this book. And these guys wanted me to quit my job and do something about it. But I wasn't so inclined at that time to do so. But since that time, I've read it 3 other times, once aloud, to really get the gist of it. It's not an easy read because some of the paragraphs, or some of the sentences, I should say, are a paragraph long. But it's worth the read and, as you said, really predicted things right on the spot.
It's one of those things that for the people who are not, for the people who can't, who aren't visionary type people, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but just some people aren't really good at looking at the things that are happening now and imagining it into the future. Mm-hmm. If that's not particularly your skill set, or people are thinking that a lot of this is hysteria, it's interesting when you read that book. You can see all the characters in our time right now, and it's not hard to see where this is headed.
And
many hear the term "Who is John Galt?" and don't realize what that's all about. But I too recommend they read it.
That's why I manage our website as John Galt, because I know that people who haven't read the book always log in and go, "Who is John Galt?" and then I secretly laugh. And hope that they will read the book and keep encouraging people to read the book, because I think when you see the end result of where the people who think everyone should be taken care of by the government and the people who believe that private enterprise is king, those two philosophies are mutually exclusive. And when you see right. what happens when the producers step away, it's not a picture we would want to see in this country, but I do think we're seeing it now. We're seeing businesses flee our state. And
Ayn Rand came from her own experience. I mean, when she wrote this book, she didn't just pull it out of the air, because she had come from the Soviet Union and had already lived through this. So it's really true to form. It's a big read, though. It's over 800 pages.
Rand had often defended the right of man over the ability of men to steal those rights. And that was a key thing in most, I read most all of her books, and that was one thing she always stressed, the right of man. But it's fact that progressives, under the guise of saving the environment, have gone so far as to allege, legislate, and litigate animal rights, even over both human rights and private property rights. That's the reason that we have the implementation of the Endangered Species Act, the wilderness bills, wilderness areas, and the presidential executive orders, and ever-increasing public land trusts all under the guise of the good of the people. One other quote that I wanted to mention was from David Rockefeller in 1994. He said during his United Nations speech, I quote, "All we need is the right major crisis, and the nations will accept the new world order," end of quote. Now, as I mentioned, we've seen a series of crises in the past 10 years that have permitted more government control. Emergencies have been accelerated, however, during the past 2 years, and we can all recognize that. But the essence of the message from Rockefeller was, there will be acceptance of new world order now that we're calling one world government. And that's more than scary. It's predictive, like the those of Ayn Rand.
I'm
just concentrating today on private property rights, but it's only part of the big package.
Yeah, it's all tied. Everything is
all
tied. That's the thing. And you had asked, you know, where do we want to focus? And you know, really, with this program, we're looking at putting out enough information in almost like spokes of a wheel, and eventually people will begin to see that they are spokes of a wheel and make those connections to their own, own life.
There's a real pattern to all of this. And, you know, it's kind of funny when we talk about private property rights, most people think about those individuals that own land. And if they don't own land, they think that that is a topic and an issue that is completely separate from their own lives, and they have no idea how that will impact them as well. Because once, as we go deeper into this patterned takeover of human rights and property rights and basic freedom, they start off in the rural areas and then they work their way in. So ultimately, it'll affect everybody.
Sure. Correct, Elizabeth, and these affect our economy, our social life, and our future. And it's just, to you and me, it seems second nature to be concerned about it. But as I said earlier, some people just haven't seemed to be able to take the time for good reasons, really. But even those good reasons have to be superseded by a realistic look of what's in our future, or the things that they think are so bad now won't even be available to them in the future. So if we can get anything from a program like this, we hope that we can awaken people to at least spend a little time. Spend some time attending a tea party. By the way, Aaron and Elizabeth, you're probably involved too, but I really commend you for what you've done, not only in the Reading area, but also in other areas. I was looking for someone to take my place in giving a presentation to the Alamar Basin, the Chester Tea Party. They were just organizing, and I had heard about you, Aaron, I think through Nadine Bailey, and so I called you, and lo and behold, you went up and helped start that program up there. They're very thankful. In fact, a couple of them may be listening today. But,
yeah, there were four of us. We field,
yeah.
Or maybe five of us.
Yeah,
actually.
I think there were five of us. And we
have a strike force.
Yeah, and they were very. You know, the thing about us facilitating other groups in other areas is that honestly, we don't have time to start from scratch and recreate the wheel. So we are thrilled to be able to help other groups get started and eliminate all of the struggle in beginning something and kind of cut to the chase a little bit quicker. So, you know, they were very receptive to that. Most groups are.
Well, again, we thank you. And shame on me for not being the one to begin the organization. And
no, you're fighting a big fight out there, Bill. So, you know, you do what you're doing, and we'll do what we're doing, and we'll all work together.
Yeah, I look at the list of what you've done since, you know, gosh, you're like an Army commercial. You had more done before I graduated from high school than most people do in their whole life.
Yeah, and that's only a sign of age, not accomplishment. But
well, you could have been multitasking half a dozen things at once.
Yeah, well, we have to be vigilant if we're going to make this work. But again, while we're wrapped up in the realism today, you are grasping the long-term losses of rights. These were guaranteed under amendments that were introduced in 1791, and we all know as the Bill of Rights. They're important.
Absolutely.
All of them. But the right to bear arms, the freedom of speech are the ones that are most discussed. And we forget about the Fifth and the Tenth Amendments that also are important to us. And we want to talk a little bit about those today. But hasn't that been your the realization you have that people just aren't even tuned in to our Bill of Rights?
I think sometimes there are two things going on. On the one hand, you have people doing study on these things. I guess for my liking, I would rather have people see the application of these things than know. It's kind of like the spirit of the law. I know that an attorney would probably fight with me about it. I mean, the letter of the law is obviously where they argue. But we live in the spirit of the law. And I think we live in the spirit of the Bill of Rights and the spirit of what our country stands for, not so much the letter of it. And if people can grasp small pieces and personal pieces of where the spirit is being violated, I think they will care about the letter. But to just, you know, chapter and verse people, it doesn't work in church. It doesn't really work anywhere, you know, to hit people with long, ponderous facts. But when you say to people, hey, some of these stories that you're going to bring up later, and we have a lady on next week who's going to talk to us about what's going on in Santa Rosa, and this sustainable development and the smart meters and all this stuff is just overtaking people's personal lives. Now, then suddenly people go, wait a minute, this doesn't feel quite right.
And, you know, it's funny because I always maintain that people don't wake up until it's in their backyard. I mean, you can talk Amen. All day long about all the things that are happening for those people that don't have long-term vision. But the fact of the matter is that until it hits them, they either don't understand, don't care, or don't wake up. And when they do, sometimes it can be too late.
And so for me, Mrs. On the other hand,
there's two of
them. The one big thing we haven't brought up yet is just the fact that all of this sounds completely implausible. I mean, the lady last week up in Yreka that's going to be on our program next week, she was talking about how Sonoma County has adopted General Plan 2020. And, I mean, sounds kind of like, I mean, every plan should have a date, and that's great and everything. And she said, yeah, the pretty much the focus of General Plan 2020 is to eliminate private property rights by 2020. Now, if you just say that to most people are like, what?
Yeah. Well, San Diego County has the same thing, and it's spreading now. And that's why I'm so pleased that we're starting to connect our emails together, like we have now with Liberty Margie, learned about her through a mutual friend, Jan Castor. And by this, we're able to start spreading the word more than we have before. What you said about the spirit of the law and the intent of the law is very important as well, Aaron. The spirit of the law and even the intent of the law is being circumvented so much, and we'll talk about that a little later if we have time, but by just changes that have been given power to agencies through congressional action over the years that people haven't realized. So I'd like to talk about that a little bit later. So as far as the two amendments that apply today, I think one of them is the Fifth Amendment, and the other is the Tenth Amendment. The last phrase in the Fifth Amendment states, of course, that we all know, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. It sounds very easy, but it's being circumvented so many times in so many ways, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. The other one, the Tenth Amendment states very simply, the power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the public. This amendment has been violated many times as well. So we have taken private property rights for granted, I think, for many years, even though they're essential to our republic. Now, how can that be? How are they essential to our republic? One, we should note that denial of public property rights is an essential characteristic of socialism. To take away that early. And it's important to note that socialism has been spread often under the alleged abolition against poverty, such as in Germany during the reign of Hitler. He came through control by telling the people he's going to help them. He's made them promises. In the United States, socialism is being hosted under the term social justice and administered to, as we see today, redistribution of wealth. So those are the things that that confront us, and we need to realize that private property loss occurs by force, in some cases where it was in Soviet Socialist Republic in Russia, or even by vote, as under the National Socialism in Germany. The loss can be total, as it has been in Russia, or partial loss of private property rights, as in England and USA today. You might want to add some comments to that, Aaron and Elizabeth.
Well, you know, one of the things that occurs to me sometimes, and I'm always thinking about those people, I think we all do, we're always thinking about those people that we know, friends, family, neighbors, acquaintances, who just seem oblivious to what's going on. And I know my husband and I talk sometimes, and we think, how can people just go about their normal lives like nothing's happening? You know, we watch our neighbors and friends go on multiple vacations, and we used to be like that, and we think, you know, how, don't you understand that we're at a very significant turning point? Don't you understand what's going on? And my question to them always is, if you know anything about the atrocities of what's happened to complete civilizations in other countries, look back in history. Look at what's happened in other places. Why do you think that can't happen here? We're not on another planet. Nothing separates us except an ocean of, you know, a body of water. Why do you think it can't happen here?
And if they're paying attention, they know that it is happening here right today, that our economy is devastated. I believe we're going to have an inflation that will be horrific.
Mm-hmm.
That people can't visualize right now, and they don't want to think about it. But how can you think about inflation when you have no money?
Exactly.
And then I
sort of, I'm much more, lay your hands on it. That's kind of more my thing. And I look at really basic stuff. Like, had a guy at last week's meeting. I had two guys, actually. One was talking about trying to build a house. He has submitted the plans over a year ago, spent over $100,000 in permits and fees, and has yet to turn a shovel full of dirt. And the house, give a guess, Bill. How big do you think the house is that he's struggling to build?
Well, it could be as little as 1,500 square feet if it isn't there.
How about as little as 720?
Wow. Yeah.
And $100,000 so far.
$100,000 down the drain in permits and fees and still not okay to build the thing. So you have that. Now, that might even be too far away from somebody, because if they've never built a house, they don't understand how ridiculous that is, maybe. But how about the guy that was also sitting there, and he said, yeah, I just remodeled my bathroom. And in order to get that thing signed off, I have to have, because there are no windows, it's an interior bathroom. He said, because of that, I have to have a fan that runs 24/7 with a light on it. He had to spend $350 on a fan that was quiet enough and efficient enough to run 24/7 in his house. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? This isn't the public library. This isn't an office building. This is a guy's house, and he has to have a bathroom fan? Somebody's making him do that?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
well,
just
there
nuts.
Are, there are a lot of things just like that. I added an addition to home in Chester, 800 square feet on the back of the house, and I want to have a master bedroom, bath, and sun porch. And because I needed two outlets, I had one door going out on sunroom and one out to the house, but I had to put in a large window in as well. I didn't want the window. The bed was going to be against the window, but I had the expense of the window. Had to put the bed against it, couldn't get out anyway. So those are the sort of things that just seem ridiculous, but that's what happens under regulations. And regulations are as damaging to us right now as laws.
that's where a lot of the private property is being impacted for people is obviously through regulation. But it isn't even, sometimes when we think about private property rights being violated, we think of people living by where they want to put an off-ramp. And so they take away their house and they put an off-ramp there. But this stuff is much more far-reaching, much smaller, and much more invasive. I mean, one person losing their house, but this is like hundreds of people being impacted with stupidity like bathroom fans. I mean, hey, if my bathroom fan on my interior bathroom had to run all the time, the thing sounds like a helicopter taking off. You know, so I guess if we ever have to replace it, I better start saving my shekels because it's going to be expensive.
There's so many things going on. I mean, if you want a new air conditioner put in your house, you have to follow somebody else's guidelines and you have to have it approved. I mean, you can't do anything in your own home anymore without approval by your local government. Now, does that bother anybody or is it just me?
Chandler and Nate are raising their hands.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
We have a group consensus. All right, we're all bothered.
So private property rights don't just mean land. We're not just talking about people that have acreage.
We're actually talking about being micromanaged, and where there is micromanagement.
the intent is that some of these regulations were good. We were getting houses built in the wrong areas for the wrong sewer systems. I noticed you're having a problem with businesses want to build up in your area, I think outside of the city or something. But those have gone overboard now. Whereas they had good intent for standardization to protect the owner and future owners, now it's become petty with counties and cities, particularly on that area, overseeing these things and also being pushed by state and federal regulations, whether it be under the Clean Water Act or the Clean Air Act. They're all coming together with such a mishmash that it doesn't pay the average person to try to fight it. You can fight it, but you'll end up doing it. So in case of the fan, put the fan in. It's too noisy. You disconnect it. Don't use it later on.
Yeah. And we've got a caller on line one, Bill. She may have a question for you. Good morning, Becky.
Good morning. Actually, I was going to tell you what we went through.
We would love to hear it.
A year ago, my husband, who is a disabled veteran, it took 6 months to get the permit, and by that time, the carport, the simple carport, was under international building codes and laws.
International?
International building codes.
International
and
carports?
Laws.
Wow.
Carport.
Now, do you live in city limits or county?
No, we live in the county. We live out in Jones Valley.
So they got confused with international airport and international carport and somehow.
Yeah. Well, it was very strange because we submitted the plans and they were approved and we went to build them. And then when they were in the middle of construction, they were told, no, this has to be totally enclosed because of the fact we had gone through the bear fire. It is now under international building codes. There will be no opening whatsoever on the entire carport.
Wow.
That's not a carport anymore. Isn't that a garage?
It would have been less expensive to build a garage than a carport. So I just thought I would let you know this is what they are doing. They are now putting us under international building codes, which is a violation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and does that make any sense to anybody else?
I can only hear part of that, but... The bad news is it is international, which is difficult to believe, but so many things are almost unbelievable to me. That gets us more into the United Nations intervention into things, and that's what's happening under Agenda 21, of course. But I doubt that that's it, but I fear that it might be someday.
Yeah, it's slowly, that's what is happening, is they're slowly pushing us to the living under what I'll call the UN regulations and rules, because unfortunately a lot of American citizens are, they are being what I call dumbed down. They watch too much TV that has idiot shows on it, so they are not paying attention to the news, and they are not joining organizations like the Tea Party.
Well, it behooves everyone to try to stay informed, because it's going to end up on your back porch at some point if you don't.
And for those people who are not hearing about any of this in the news that they plug into, whether it's on television, radio, or the internet, if all these items are new to you, you should really take a closer look at who's giving you information, because it's obviously not comprehensive.
Right.
Because of your show, what I have done is I have emailed your web pages out to others who think like we do, that are what I would call a patriot, or in my case, I consider myself a constitutionalist, and have sent it out so that they can listen in, because they are in Oregon and Washington.
That's fantastic, and that's really, that has been our goal all along. Mm-hmm. It wasn't to create a program that was only applicable to Reading. There are so many groups out there, and it was interesting when I was down in Sacramento. I was at a Howard Jarvis event on Thursday, and I had a couple people. They said, "Well, you guys have a radio program. Is it an online radio thing?" And I said, "No, it's in a real radio station." Really? Oh, the real radio station will actually let you guys talk about this stuff? And that's very abnormal for at least the rest of California. Those other groups in California, they were surprised.
Well,
you know, Aaron, another probability is that this lady should take this to the Planning Commission and finally the Board of Supervisors. Those who have come from cities don't realize the access they have to both those entities.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
And take advantage of them, because sometimes, I know as a one-time Plumas County Supervisor, we don't know what's really going on in the bowels of the government, and it takes someone like this to bring it to our attention.
And they do say, and it is true, that all of these things start at the local level. I mean, we have a tendency to think that everything is happening somewhere else, but in truth, it's all happening at the local level. And it's critical that people attend Board of Supervisors meetings and City Council meetings. You don't have to be an expert. You don't have to know everything. As you attend on a regular basis, you start to understand the process, but they know that you're there, and more importantly, they need to know that the citizens are coming in and paying attention.
Well, I'm going to do like the gentleman said. I'm going to go to my supervisor and make him aware, even though this is a year now it's built, but I just thought that was the most ludicrous thing I had ever heard in my entire life.
That is pretty stupid.
But we're starting to hear a lot of stupid things, aren't we?
We're hearing a lot of stupid stuff, and that only gets to happen if nobody does anything. Then it becomes more and more and more. And I mean, seriously, most people that I ask about that house, just the general gist of that house. Okay, somebody spends $100,000 in permits. It's been well over a year. How big is the house? And people go, oh, I don't know, 5,000 square feet. You know, they're thinking mm-hmm. the guy's building, you know, some sort of a castle and trying to reroute, you know, the Sacramento River or something mm-hmm. like that. It's like, nope. You know, he owns the ground, just wants to put up one bedroom, one bath. It was bigger. The house was bigger. He's actually cut his house in half, and he tried to make it two bedroom, one bath. They gave him more grief. He had to have it re-engineered again. He's finally like, please, please, just one bedroom, one bath. I just want to move out of my travel trailer.
And, you know, another wild story very quickly is someone that I spoke to that has about 80 acres. She bought it years ago and doesn't really have much going on there, but that's where she kind of goes to get away. And so she's got a travel trailer parked on her acreage so that once in a while she can get out of town. And it's in Shasta County. So one day her grown kids decided to all come visit. And they decided that what they would do is go up to the 80 acres and pitch their tents and camp out on mom's property. Does anybody here see a problem with that?
Not.
Well, she made the mistake of mentioning to somebody from the Shasta County Planning Commission, because they were talking about a completely different issue, and she was told that, no, your kids cannot go camp out on your 80 acres, that's against the law, that's considered temporary housing.
Yeah.
How's that sound for you?
All together now.
Oh, man.
<It's> like,
and you know, honestly, you shake your head and you think, okay, maybe you misunderstood. Is there a part of the story that you're leaving out? But in fact, that's the whole truth.
Wow, in our backyard, we temporarily housed my nephew's Little League team for a weekend when they came up here on a tournament.
You needed a permit for that.
They showered in my pool, too. Oh, major health violation.
Okay, so folks, no camping in your backyard.
That's only did your pool, you're lucky.
Yeah, well, you know, they were, what, sixth grade boys? They had a great time. They were playing at Big League Dreams. They thought they'd died and gone to heaven. They go and it's, you know, all set up like regular, you know, like big league ball games, and they were thrilled, but it was summertime. They lived in tents, and
So, Bill, we're coming up in a couple of minutes on a break. Is there any way that you'd like to wrap up this hour?
No, I'd like to finish that segment and then go on the next hour to talk about things that are happening in regard to the loss of private property rights, not only here, but also in other countries. Talk about a tour they took, a bicycle tour to Cotswolds in England, to emphasize that point. So I'll wait till you return.
All right. And we're working on our hospitality skills. So thanks, Becky, for calling.
Yes, thank you so much.
We always leave our callers hanging.
No, that's okay, because I was able to listen to it over the phone. And do not be surprised if you get a phone call out of a little town called Prairie City, Oregon, because that's where I shifted to.
Great.
We have very limited service up there, and you have a tea party up there.
That's awesome. Wonderful. Happy to have them. And, you know, this is a library of information that can be sent to anybody. So we're happy to have that become a useful tool for people and drive up the awareness.
So sometimes, thanks for sharing your story, Becky.
Absolutely.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's see. We are reaching the end of the first hour here. We are We the People, hosted by the Reading Tea Party. You can find us online at readingteaparty.com. You can call us at 530-605-4567. And you're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Reading, the home of Free Fire Media.
You're welcome. Welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. We're in our second hour. And for those of you that are just tuning in, and there used to be another show on at 9 o'clock, this is about our third or fourth week of our two-hour show. It's Elizabeth and Aaron, and we're here with Chandler and Nate. They're our engineering guys, and they get up bright and early with us every Sunday morning, along with our husbands, Bill and Dan. Anyway, I wanted to talk a little bit about our sponsors. We have our friend Damsel, who is a great support and a great patriot of the Reading Tea Party. We have North State Consultants, Mark Kent with his wife Linda and his sister Linda. They're on East Cypress Avenue, and they are tax folks, but not just your traditional tax folks. They're really good at helping you keep your money, so it's definitely worth giving them a call. Their number is 221-0101. And then we have Jim and Nancy Myatt, who have created All Temp Tactical Lube, which is a lubricant cleaner for weaponry, and they designed it. It's a secret recipe. Jim won't tell us what's in it, but he specifically designed it for our troops overseas because they're dealing with extreme temperatures on both ends, and obviously they need their weaponry to work well every time. Their 800 number is 800-301-0046, and just keep in mind that you can find out all about our sponsors, our current show, our archived shows, by going to readingteaparty.com. You don't have to join the website. Just go to readingteaparty.com, click on the blue radio show icon, and everything you need to know you will find right there. And if you want to give us a call, the number is 605-4567.
And that number's on there, too. So if you didn't jot that down quick enough, Reading Tea Party, click on radio show, and you're in. You can also listen to the programs we've had the last couple of months, actually several months, that are all designed toward either private property or information that would be sort of under the umbrella of the Tea Party ideas, the limited government, the fiscal responsibility, and the adherence to the Constitution. That's kind of the broad brush that we follow. I wanted to also let people know that we have a variety of sponsors. We're always looking for sponsors, so if you know somebody who'd like to sponsor the program who maybe doesn't have a business exactly, but would like to sponsor the program, happy to have that as well. You can always email us for more information at 1460-1460@readingteaparty.com. And I wanted to throw some kudos out to Terry and Sally Raposa,
who create our We the People sweatshirts,
yep,
and T-shirts. Now we're into the sweatshirt season, so they have...
They have these great hoodies, and I, for one, am a hoodie lover. And it's a beautiful, bright... Oh, they're so wonderful to put on first thing in the morning. I'm telling you. Yeah, see? Nate's got one on right now.
Nate's got it. I'm always hot, so I don't want to wear a hot sweatshirt.
Yeah, but the hoodie sweatshirts come in a really pretty shade of red and blue.
And a handsome shade of blue.
And simply say, We the People. And it's really interesting to wear them out in public because you get a lot of comments, and people are real curious about what
absolutely
that means.
Those guys are the gear people. They do all of our hats and our shirts and all that stuff, and Terry and Sally always make sure that it benefits the Tea Party, and also the We the People shirts and sweatshirts, they support the radio program. So if you see those around town, you know that they're one of us,
yeah,
or one of you, depending
absolutely
on who it is. And so let's see, we've covered our bases there.
Yep.
I wanted Nate to give a little promo. He does a program, he and Chandler and William Whitecrow do a program at 8 o'clock on Sunday nights called Sovereign Minds.
So who's on tap for tonight?
Give the people a commercial, Nate.
Well, tonight we have from the Oath Keepers.
Mm.
It's a really nationwide organization, probably worldwide now. We have Stuart Rhodes. He's the founder of that coming on. He'll be on for the whole hour. Go over the Constitution and how it's being trampled on.
Or decimated, actually.
Right. Yeah. So it's really good. It's going to be good. Make sure you turn in 8 p.m. And same right here, 605-4567.
And I want to make a little plug for your show and for Nate and Chandler. I mean, they're both in their 20s, both veterans. William Whitecrow is a veteran. You're putting this wonderful program together, and obviously Carl Bott is a veteran. So, you know, we're in very good company, and I just want to say thank you to all of you for serving your country. That isn't said enough, and I...
Absolutely. That's a yeah, I said absolutely again. Absolutely.
Bill, well, give it up.
My husband's out there tallying how many times we say that. So, you know, it's kind of a race today.
It's pretty fun.
It's the magic word.
I'd like to thank you guys for keeping tabs on everything local going on. I mean, you guys do a really good job with that.
Thank you.
We kind of focus on the big conspiracy things, and you guys focus local. So together we're going to conquer.
That's right.
So.
That's the whole idea. If people who are like-minded stick together. That was the whole idea of the Tea Party was, well, it didn't really matter if you were a Democrat or a Republican or an Independent or a non-voter or a whatever. If we can all kind of fit under the idea that this is a great country and we want to keep it, not necessarily, you know, some people say we're regressive, we're promoting a regressive philosophy that we don't want the country to improve or grow or develop. That's actually not the point. But we
exactly
do want it ultimately
want
to all be about the personal liberties and freedoms that our country was founded on, because without that, we're not America anymore.
We all need to unite no matter what our opinions are.
And
no matter what. That's
find
what it's gonna
find
take
some common ground.
And, you
yes
know, and there are so many groups out there, like Oath Keepers, the Tea Party, this, that, and the other. And the fact of the matter is that they are all like-minded. And that's where we build our coalitions, and that's what we're doing with the private property rights. There are so many organizations out there that are fighting issues in their own backyard, and our goal is to try to bring some of these folks together.
It's always unfortunate when people begin to subdivide smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller because they miss the power. They miss the power of the whole. We don't actually have to work in lockstep. But if we're all on the same page and we get the information to people, however it gets there, we have a chance. It's a numbers game.
It's a numbers
game.
We
see it every election. I think sometimes it's funny in the non-election time period. We don't really fully appreciate that it is a numbers game. But then when the election results come in, everybody goes, how can we keep losing, you know, large swaths of ground in the Bay Area and Los Angeles? And a lot of it is because we, the people, have not reached out to all those folks. We talk amongst ourselves and, in essence, wind up preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
It's about finding things that also affect folks in urban areas.
Okay, perfect example. Monday night, we have Representative
Hi, Carl Bott
coming from the ACLU, coming to talk to us about the local library issue. And it just so happens that the chairman of these Northern California counties is a very good friend of mine. And I'm assuming that we might vote differently, but I have to tell you that every time we have an election and I go to my polling place to vote, he's there volunteering. So we might be slightly different in some of our views, but in the end, we do have common ground, and that's what we all have to work at. Regardless of how you vote or how you're registered or every little thing you believe in, find the common ground, because I guarantee you it's there.
For the folks that are listening that are thinking, oh, but you know, those Democrats, you know, that's become really popular, is to lump people in a category and cross them out. And the thing I think people don't understand is that not all Republicans are necessarily conservative. Not all Democrats are liberal. A lot of times our voting registration reflects family history. It reflects sometimes mistaken belief systems. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, we vote, especially in California, on measures and propositions on our ballot that oftentimes people have no information about. There was the Prop 23 this last year that would have rolled back the California cap and trade law that's coming into effect and is making... I just heard from a lady who is the president of the Dump Truck Owners Association. I listened to her on Thursday. You know, most people don't think about dump trucks, really, but it was very interesting. She pointed out that if, in fact, the levies in California ever fail, especially in Sacramento, their levies are actually in far worse shape than New Orleans ever thought of being. So any major flooding or any of that kind of thing, we need the dump trucks. However, they have basically been regulated out of existence by the California cap and trade bill, AB 32. So when Prop 23 came along, it had all this, you know, fuzzy language about this, that, and the other. But really, even with the word global warming in the title, it didn't turn people off. And I think really some of these things, you know, we keep encouraging people, especially through this private property discussion. If it says sustainable development, sustainable is a great word in real life. But as applied to our property, bad.
Well, they always do that. Yeah. They always give it nice names and make you think it's going to, you know, so that's the whole problem.
Smart growth. You're thinking smart growth. Who wouldn't be for that?
Understand that the word
smart is bad.
The words smart, global, and sustainable are really bad words when it comes to your future.
Yeah, they should be hot button words. And yet, there are people who really are like us, that are really conservative, who think people should be able to control their own property and build and develop and not be crazy about it, you know, work within the confines of, you know, normal rules. And yet they think smart growth is great because they think smart means smart.
Growth.
Grow. Smart growth, of course. We wouldn't want to just sprawl all over the place and be all higgledy-piggledy about it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, some of these things are part of our really basic education.
Well, you know, before we bring Bill Dennison back in, I know we've got Mike Adams on the line. And Mike's pretty instrumental in finding some battles in Siskiyou County. Are you there, Mike?
I am here.
Good morning.
No, I wanted to point out to everybody that, you know, our personal property rights, the erosion of them, we often look to our legislators, you know, whether our Board of Supervisors or the state legislature or even in the national legislature. And yet the majority of the erosion of our personal property rights is not coming from our legislators. They're coming from the Department of. If it says something department or the Department of, that's where the erosion is coming from. You know, the Building Department, the Planning Department, the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Interior. These are the people that are eroding our rights ever bit by bit by saying, oh no, 1,000-gallon septic tank is no longer acceptable, you have to build this or that or the other thing. And you say, but that doesn't apply to me because I don't live in the Sacramento, you know, Delta. We don't care, we've decided if it's good for there, it's good for everywhere, you know. And it's the departments that we have to watch, and they are becoming either the fourth or the fifth branch of government. And we have to, when we catch them at that, we have to go to our elected officials and say, this is unacceptable.
And, you know, Mike, that brings up a really good point that has come up to me a couple of times in the last hour, and this is the perfect segue into it, and that is that we do tend to focus on our elected representatives
and what they are doing and what they're not doing and how much they work and what they get paid. And all of our focus is put into that arena. But what we're forgetting about is the actual bureaucracy of our federal and state governments, the layer upon layer upon layer of department after department after department and agency after agency. And those are the ones that are regulating, fining, and feeing us to death.
And let's bring up the big word. They're unelected.
And they're unelected.
We spend so much time worrying about our elections and our elected officials, and yet we have, I don't know, I think sometimes to punish them, you know, we're sort of punitive mindset people are, you know, to punish them, we've given the power to someone else. It's like,
which means we just...
Not great.
Cut our nose off to spite our face.
Absolutely. Mr. Dennison, would you like to weigh in on this? You're awfully quiet out there.
I was waiting and listening. I really appreciate the conversation that's going on. And what Mike is talking about is it's certainly true.
Bye, Mike. Having, did you just hang up on us?
With a kind of, pardon?
He's still there.
Oh, Mike's still there?
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. Okay, Bill, you're there. Bye, Mike. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, Mike's correct on the erosion of our private property rights through what he called Department of Intervention. I've seen that as a public, as a county supervisor, and I've watched it over the years with my work with state and federal government. It's correct that because of bureaucrats that are in the bowels of government, they're not elected. They're slow to change. I've been watching over the years how it's slow to change people that are working, even though and making decisions, even though we change our elected officials. So that's something we need to consider. But to that end, we need to be right on top of the situation. When we transition into another party, say, we need to make sure that those involved make those transitions quickly and with the proper people, not only just concentrate on the elected officials, but also those that are appointed by the elected officials. So that's very important. It's good to hear of younger people that are beginning to participate, as the gentleman was on earlier as well. We have to have that. We can't sustain our drive if we do not. I also noted, I think it was Elizabeth's note, said something about the common ground. It is an essential element that we focus on commonality and try to get some of the differences behind us. At the same time, it was noted something about non-voters. We need to concentrate on bringing the non-voters into the voting scheme. They might be useful locally, but they're not useful at all in changing the government the way we believe it should be changed. So we need to concentrate on those who don't believe it's necessary to vote.
Absolutely.
As things get a little bit more off the rails, there are one of two things that happen. People seem to plug in more, or they feel disenfranchised and they back off. And
the disenfranchised is really a big factor. I talked to a young man about 28 years old. I asked him when he was going to vote. He said, "I'm not going to vote. My vote doesn't make any difference." Well, that's an adage that we've heard over the years, but I hope that it doesn't grow. I hope that people understand that it doesn't matter to anyone if you don't vote, but you can make a difference by voting and helping others to understand how they should vote.
And again, there are so many countries where the citizens are not able to vote. They're not allowed to vote. And that is a right that we have to hang on to while we still have it. Whether or not you believe that your vote makes a difference, it's a God-given and a Constitution-given right, and we've got young men overseas fighting for this right in our military, so you got to exercise it.
That's, I think, part of always the message on this, although we do, you know, talk about the problems. Bottom line is the fix comes at the ballot box. But the ballot box is simply like the last chapter of a book. It's not worth anything if you didn't read the first chapters. We have to prepare, and now is the time, which is why we're looking so hard at the things that are impacting people, what to watch for,
and how to vet. I mean, something really is easy. If you're voting for a county supervisor or a city council member, something as simple as, how do you feel about sustainable development? What does that mean to you? What a great question. And if they say, well, you know, I think that it's all about the Strategic Growth Council and getting the grant money and getting the rail, the high-speed rail in, and then we can all live in rabbit hutches in the city. See, when they say that, then you go, uh-oh, you're not of my tribe.
Right, yeah.
But then you talk to a guy like Doug LaMalfa, and he's putting in Senate Bill 22 to defund the high-speed rail, the ridiculous little Hooterville rail that's running between, what, Pixley and Fresno or whatever it is.
By the way, when you see Doug, Senator LaMalfa, be sure and give him my regards. I have high respect for him, have worked with him. He always attended the Sierra Cascade Lighting Conference when I was executive director. I assume he still does. He's a gentleman who will show up for any event if you ask him to be there.
Yeah.
So he's involved with the people.
And not just during the election time either.
No, not at all.
Which is great. He actually knows what's going on in the communities.
Now, Bill, you had a couple of examples of people that you know that have firsthand experienced this slow erosion of private property rights. Can you enlighten us with those stories?
You say again, I couldn't hear that very well, Elizabeth.
Well, you know, you have an example of somebody who, or
yes.
Actually yourself, Half Moon Bay, and then
right.
Another friend of yours that have firsthand experienced this erosion of our property rights.
Right.
Can you give us the history
on
this?
I'd like to
go
into those a little bit before we run out of time. Yes. Is that okay now to do that?
Sure, yes, absolutely.
Okay. One thing I wanted to discuss also, and my wife, LaJuan, who you met, Aaron, thinks I'd already talked about it, but I think it was when I talked to her last night about it, but... Have I discussed my bicycle tour to the Cotswolds in England?
No, we talked about it. You told me about it off the air over the weekend.
Yeah.
But
right, yeah. But, well, I might just delve into that briefly. I did participate in a 2003 bicycle tour to the Cotswolds in England. And I use this as an example of what's happened over there over the years and what's coming to our town tomorrow. We toured through much of the rural areas, dotted with dairy farms and orchards, a very peaceful scene. I first assumed that this was all private property, but during various stops, coffee breaks, and lunches, talking to the locals, and then presentations by the tour guide, I asked questions that quickly led to the understanding that very much the land had been taken over by conservancies and land trusts. The families were just caretakers of the land that would eventually revert to the government. But we have many of those areas in the United States as well, and I wanted to talk about one of them that impacted me personally. And the second one is the taking of a property rights without compensation that has been in court for 20 years. The first case is the confiscation of private property for conversion to open space. My brother and I inherited two lots in Half Moon Bay. It's adjacent to the Pacific Ocean. The lots were purchased by our grandfather in 1932, and he and my uncle and we have paid taxes since 1932. All concerned saw this seaside lots as very valuable. The streets were mapped and named, but never developed, but it was a legal development. In 1981, due to lawsuits by local environmental groups, a moratorium against building or camping, as you mentioned before too, or any private use was issued on all properties in that area. Now, we were still obligated to pay property taxes if we wanted to maintain ownership, so we did that for a while. But in 2010, the city doubled the taxes to an assessment, a new school district assessment. When we learned that many owners had given up the fight for the private property rights and were donating their property to the Coastside Land Trust that was controlled by the environmentalists rather than initiate the building moratorium in the first place, it was obvious that litigation and the waiting game so often used by progressives had won. Our alternatives were limited. So we gave the property to the Coastside Land Trust rather than pay any more taxes and fighting the system as the owners.
Did they act surprised when you did that? Did they at least pretend like they were surprised when you just handed over the property?
Oh, no, they asked for it.
Jeez.
Well, that's
then
the ultimate
then,
goal.
Then he sent me a notice last week wondering if I wanted my name put on a plaque showing that I had donated. And my
well,
answer to them
fantastic.
Was, no, I didn't donate
up,
willingly.
That you gave up the fight against the government.
Buyer.
You deserve a plaque. You gave into the government.
I just deserve
a plaque.
I just want you to know we're going to have to take an engineering break. Chandler's getting ready to start banging his head on the desk.
Yeah. Our two guys in here are like, you know, they're astounded. They're totally astounded.
Yeah. Well, you score one more for the socialists who believe that property rights are unimportant. In this case, it was not a matter of violation of the Fifth Amendment. There was no attempt to gain compensation. Thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars have been spent in total against the environmental litigation, but the landowners were beaten into submission. And the willing seller, willing buyer concept under eminent domain, again, lost in the political court arena to the persistence of the far left. So that's one that's very personal to me. The other example is a long story, and I need to tell not all of it, but a lot of it. It's an example of one example out of thousands in the federal government, in this case, Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management, the confiscation of the Wayne Hage property without any financial compensation. Now, this story started back in the 1970s. The Hage property, the Pine Creek Ranch, adjoins the federally administered Tioga and Humboldt National Forest and Monitor Valley in Nevada. Along with the ownership of the ranch came vested water and grazing rights passed down to him in a line of succession, family succession, since the mid-1800s. These vested rights were on federal lands, and in common law, according to the various acts of Congress, were considered a private property right subject to taxation by IRS, which they paid. Traditionally, the law and the government of the United States had accepted this situation until certain agencies of the government, in this case the Forest Service and BLM, and its allies in the environmental movement decided to reinterpret federal management as well as property law and water rights in their adjudication. Now, the politically powerful environmental groups included Sierra Club, National Wildlife Federation, and Natural Resource Defense Council, all of which I have fought one time or more over the years. Page and his crew were riding in the mountains, rounding up cattle. First time he knew there was a problem. Coming down the trail were some Forest Service people he didn't recognize. He asked them what they were there for. He said they were sent from the Tonopah office, that they were not from the Tonopah office. They were in the Austin office, which is not his district. And when asked why they were there, he said, well, we were told to come here. And they were surveying for water, and the Forest Service was going to file a claim on all the water rights in Monitor Valley, which included his property. So he got no answer other than they're just going to do it. So he contacted Nevada State Engineer, who confirmed that the Forest Service and BLM had filed a claim, including claims on about 150 or 60 vested water rights of Hage and Pine Creek Ranch. His only recourse was to petition the engineer requesting a determination of who had the real rights in Monitor Valley. Now, mind you, this petition was filed on October of 1981. This added, the settlement should have been only taking maybe a few months. It stretched into 10 years because the Forest Service used one delaying tactic after another. And In this way, it gained time to solidify its power over federal lands and condition people to accepting the new order and interpretation of the law in its favor. I witnessed that period of time when those things were going on, not only in that area for ranchers, but also for the forest industry. So after years of waiting, Hage was, he found himself on the brink of financial disaster, actually, and his operation of the ranch was becoming untenable. But he filed a takings claim in the Federal Court of Claims in 1981, where he sought justice in compensation under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution. And as we discussed under this amendment, the government may not take property without compensation. And Hage and others had always believed that their grazing permits and water rights were private property rights. In the suit against the government, Hage proposed that there had been a taking of private land, water rights and irrigation ditch right away, forage rights, range land improvements, and cattle by the federal government. Well, the Forest Service fired the first shot by taking pictures of the area and sending them to him and saying that there wasn't much grass growing there. It was obviously overgrazing. Well, they took the photographs in November. In the wintertime, when there isn't much grass growing, he took pictures the next year showing with the day, but it actually asked the district ranger to come out and took the photographs with the grass up to the ranger's waist. This is District Ranger David Greider, for a name. I don't know where he is today. But this David Greider rebuttal was, well, it's not the grass we're supposed to grow there. It's a different grass. The same grass has been growing for centuries, according to Hayes. The kicker on this, I think, is that Ranger Greider sent a copy of the cancellation notice to the attorney for National Federation of Wildlife. Now, this is in government documents and not just hearsay. He sent it to Roy Elker and thanked him for who's the attorney for the National Federation of Wildlife, and thanked him for National Federation of Wildlife lobbying efforts in Congress on behalf of an increased Forest Service budget. This is payoff time. They voted for they lobbied for a higher budget, but they wanted also, the Wildlife Federation wanted some regulations to be enforced, and their policy, NFW's policy, has always been aimed at ending all grazing and agriculture water use on public land. It's interesting, during a lecture that's also documented before other environmentalists, Elker declared, and I quote, "How you win is one at a time. He, the rancher, goes out of business, he dies, and you wait him out, but you win." Well, the spring of 1991, went out to the area and surveyed it again, got no results. Subsequently, the Forest Service began a propaganda barrage and mailing campaign that was targeting sympathetic members of Congress, assisted by environmental groups. They painted Hayes as a violent extremist who should be dealt with in what they called an extreme manner. The stage was being set for confrontation. The same summer of 91, long before the Senate vote on the question of raising grazing fees, Hayes received a call from an official of the Oyabe National Forest telling him some of his cattle were trespassing on government land. In the process of moving 2,000 herd of cattle from winter to summer range, that's not unusual. He lost some of the cattle from his area and he wandered over into the federal land. So he drove out to the site to see what he could do, and he was surrounded by 20 or 30 federal agents armed with semi-automatic rifles in blackjacks. Some of them were stationed on high points expecting a confrontation. Hayes took pictures of those, and to the chagrin of the agents, there was no violent confrontation. The two later occasions, on two different occasions, heavily armed agents came out to his former allotment and prevented Hayes' employees from moving cattle off the closed allotment. And during these intrusions by federal agents, 104 cattle were confiscated and subsequently sold at auction, with the profits remaining with the Forest Service. They took his property, sold it, and kept the money. Pushing the knife in age a little deeper, agents sent him a bill.
Oh, my gosh.
Confiscating the cattle. There was more to the story than that, but the ending is tragic. In September of 91, Hayes filed his taking claim against the Forest Service in the U.S. Court of Claims. The government countered by charging Hayes and woodcutter Lloyd Siemens with a felony for taking government property by cutting and removing brush from an irrigation ditch. The government sued against Hayes, and all felony charges were thrown out of court. But immediately after Hayes filed his suit with the Claims Court, the Sierra Club, the National Wildlife Federation, and the National Resource Defense Council filed for status as interveners, saying that ranchers should receive no compensation for losing their water and grazing permits. Well, it was thought that the U.S. claims, in fact, the court claimed, denied the environmental group's motion to intervene, that there was going to be a finalization of this case back in 1996. However, that was not the case. It kept going to court and continued until August of 2010, when the U.S. Court and Federal Claims did order $4 million be paid to the Wayne Hayes estate. Now, that was just last August. The court gave 90 days for further appeal, and on the 90th day, in October 2010, the federal government did appeal and the case is still unresolved. Now, that's part of the tragedy. The worst part of the tragedy is that Hayes' first wife had since passed away several years before, and Wayne married Congresswoman Ellen Chenoweth. Wayne Hayes then passed away on June 5th, 2006. Ellen Chenoweth, a past congresswoman, died in an automobile accident on October 2nd of 2006. So there'll be no compensation except maybe to the estate. But this is such a misjustice of use of federal power. It's unbelievable.
Well, you
I
know,
want to relate that
and
to
I think one thing that happens that people might not understand when for instance, your two lots on Half Moon Bay. The moment there's a moratorium for no longer being able to develop, instantly you lose all the value in that property.
Right.
And you then can't sell it, because why would somebody buy a piece of property that has no value that they can't build a home on? So even if you could sell it, you wouldn't get anything for it. And that's kind of a backdoor way of some of these government agencies. That's how they get the land for nothing from you.
That's
kind of scary.
And they wait it out, as emphasized by the wildlife. They wait it out until people are worn out or die.
Yeah, I was going to say, like Mr. Hage, they're not going to die. Just a new bureaucrat comes in and takes the helm, and the machine moves on.
We're waiting for the final analysis of that. There's a small group of us who are anticipating that we're going to intervene in this somehow, but first we need to find out exactly what the appeals are all about. Ron Arnold is leading that for us and helped us decide what to do, but I've been amazed and pleased that people from far and wide have become involved and want to help in this, and I'm hoping that something can be done to help the family.
All these things are just a piece of a bigger picture, and what I'm finding a lot of people doing is becoming passionate about a particular issue. The dams being taken out of a lot of places, but Siskiyou County for one. The monuments that are proposed that will landlock people's private property and make it essentially worthless. Net it will become They encourage you to no. What was the word you used? They don't encourage you to sell it to the government. You used a really funny.
They beat you to submission.
Right, but there's it's available.
Eminent domain.
Yeah, but it's available to be sold. I mean, obviously it's the big stick of encouragement. You know, it isn't like you had an option for
And then they want to put up a plaque in your honor.
Yeah, that's really, wow.
That's a little offensive, actually.
Yeah,
that's what I told them in different type of language.
Yeah, we are on the air, so...
It wasn't politically correct, is that what you're saying?
Carl said we couldn't use bad words on the air.
Correct. there's some that believe that, and I've been in this battle for 35 years at least, there's some that believe that the forest industry never attempted to form a coalition with others during the time when our industry was being battered by progressives.
Spotted owl?
Yeah, the Wilderness Bill, the Wilderness Area Reviews, 1 and 2, and the Spotted Owl Myths. We did initiate and finance a large grassroots effort under, as you noted earlier, the Alliance for Environment and Resources. We did attempt to join with different recreation groups, miners, cattlemen, and ranchers. We had some successes, but the fact that we're all not feeling the economic pain at the same time, I believe deterred a full action plan by all that were concerned. We find ourselves attacked by local groups such as Save Mount Shasta, national groups such as Sierra Club, Natural Resource Defense Council, EPIC, Earth First, Audubon Society, National Wildlife Federation, and even more. Now, some of these organizations, you notice that it started from AER is still active, and I appreciate the fact. Share and Care, and there's one, 2Care down in Tuolumne County. We had the right idea, but we acted too late. And that's why I emphasize the need for action now. We do see some groups coming together that can be helpful. And as we see what's happening to our private property rights and read Agenda 21, we must begin to understand the threats to our own personal life. As indicated in the thesis of my outline, private property going but not gone, we can still turn the socialistic movement around, but only if we work together. And this togetherness is still coming about. We have Freedom 21 that, and the Tea Parties that are attempting to counter these misdeeds, and the Tea Party has the ability and enthusiasm to include the protection of private property rights in their daily agenda, as they're doing. And this terrific grassroots movement has proven very effective during the past couple of years.
Yeah, that falls under our mantra of limited government.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of it is fiscal responsibility. My sister-in-law works for the Department of Fish and Game, and she's responsible for going and choosing farmland and rural land and turning it over basically to the Nature Conservancy with our tax dollars. And they're not paying below market values. I mean, they're paying high values, which would take people that maybe would not be interested in selling, and especially in an economy like this, makes it much more attractive, especially when the regulation's going to ultimately force them out. So
I'm glad you mentioned that. That is true. There's a lot of money available through private contributions and some government grants to be used to buy these lands. And, they do it to the, not the carrot, but the stick first. They have regulations, like they did on my property in Half Moon Bay, to not permit you to utilize your land the way you wish. And you can no longer afford to ranch or to farm, or to grow timber. And so therefore they offer you a large price. It's particularly appealing to small landowners who need the money now for their college, to kids' college education or some other goal that they've set over the years. And so they sell the property. They have no other choice.
Yeah, they see the handwriting on the wall, and you realize, do I just absolutely frustrate myself into an early grave and wind up with nothing, or do I just roll over now? And I guess that's kind of where we are as a society. We've gotten to that point where people do have to kind of make that decision. Are you going to get involved in this at whatever level you can and push back on this concept and stand with the people? Maybe you're not a rancher or a farmer or a logger or somebody who's directly impacted by these things. But I think that it's interesting. Like anything else, if you go too far too fast, you boil the frog too quickly and people will jump out of the pan. And next week we're going to be talking about the smart meters. Now those are coming to everybody.
Yep.
They're coming to everybody's house. And pushing back on the smart meter is a way that everybody can step up and make a statement, which is great. So I would encourage the people who are thinking, well, this private property sounds kind of bleak, but there's nothing I can do. That's absolutely incorrect. There's tons you can do.
Yeah. So we have
a caller.
John, line one. Good morning.
Hello, this is John Menke.
John Menke. Hey, how's it going?
Well, I thought I would call in. I'm a retired professor from UC Berkeley and UC Davis in range science, and I've been relating the conversation here to the Monitor Valley situation, but I wanted to bring it immediately back to your reference to Siskiyou County. About 2.5 months ago, we were approached for the second time from Wildlands Incorporated representatives here to buy our ranch here in Quartz Valley. We're immediately west of Scott Valley, and we happen to have a very good water right, and we also have prime coho rearing habitat on our place and downstream from our place, likely due to our good management. And I was appalled to be approached, and my wife and I were appalled, to effectively offer us $5 to $7 million to get out of here by selling our property. And when I found out this money was being taken directly from PacifiCorp to the tune of that same amount over the next 10 years between now and when dams are going to be removed, supposedly by the Secretary of Interior, we were a little appalled that since our power rates are continuing to go up here, that this is just dinging all the power rate people in Southern Oregon and Northern California. And we shouldn't be paid this kind of money for our property. We only paid $565,000 for it in 1993. It's not worth $5 to $7 million. But the trouble is, with the way our government is working these days, these outfits can buy up a ranch like this and do mitigation on the property and get all kinds of federal and state money and make on the margin big money and basically convert private land into public land at the same time. And we find it appalling to see all our local people being for high electricity rates and putting them out of business in terms of their natural hay production and livestock production, and letting a few people in here be compensated extraordinarily high amounts of money to get you out of here.
And an interesting point is that a lot of that money comes from the taxpayers.
Exactly. In fact, day before yesterday, Marcia Armstrong emailed me. She heard we were going to sell out to the Creek Indian Nation, and it was just a one-liner from our board of supervisor. And I emailed back to her first, no, and then I thought maybe I should email her again with a little explanation. Well, yesterday morning I had a feedback from her, and she didn't needed to know that, because if in fact the Creek Indian Nation were to buy this property, and would have been handed over by Wildlands Incorporated through the federal government, then the federal government, she said in their memo back to me, they could open up the adjudication, the Shackelford adjudication, which was in the early 70s, and then they could start redividing the water up again. And then she also said, well, she'd have to contact our local assessor, because the value would change, because when it goes into tribal trust, there's no taxes anymore. So in fact, the county would be dinged for what they're receiving from us for the last 17 years. If in fact it went into that arrangement, there would be no money coming to the county anymore. So they bankrupt the county, and they bankrupt the producers, and they readjust the water rights, and all this is being instigated by entrepreneurial people that have connections with the agencies and some money behind them to make the first down payment, and then continue to get payments from the federal government to make their investment a sound one.
So the same thing
in Spring River up in the Upper Basin. They bought a 6,000-acre ranch up there that also had treatment by the Corps of Engineers a long time ago to help stabilize agricultural soils. And they're sitting on a 6,000-acre property that they've already cashed it in for its mitigation value, but now they're running cattle on the whole property and have a private cattle ranch manager up there. So they're keeping it in agriculture to maintain some face with the local people up there, but in fact they've already taken their money and gone on to other things.
So two really strong points to make to the general public in layman's terms is that when these state or federal agencies come in, try to buy your land, they turn it back into public land, and make no mistake, folks, public land doesn't mean that you get to set a foot on it, and then you also lose a huge tax base, because the private property owners will pay property taxes, the government doesn't. So not only is that land taken away from the public, although it's funded by the public, but also you lose a huge tax base, which means the economy, the local economies in that area, go in the tank.
Exactly. In fact, our assessor has been attending the scoping meetings for dam removal out there, because the property owners, who are so excited about losing their lakefront property along the Klamath River there where the reservoirs are presently, the values of the property are down to about one-tenth of their original property value, and our assessor is reassessing all those down. Well, Siskiyou County is a very poor county. They can't afford to be taking otherwise valuable property and reducing it to 10% of its value, and the tax base just goes to hell. And, of course, then what that does is it makes the local government more dependent on handouts from the state and the Fed. So this is what we call it in science in my field, I'm a systems ecologist, is a positive feedback system. It positively feeds back into the same problem and makes the problem worse. I wanted to speak on a couple of other, I know we're very limited in time, but I wanted to mention a couple of other matters here. We had a big flood in here, we call it the 97 New Year's Day storm. We had a Pineapple Express. You probably used that term down in Reading as well, where you would get these warm southern storms, in this case on top of snow. And we got really big scouring events here in Quartz Valley, as well as a lot of Scott Valley, and it pushed out a lot of the good cover along streams. Well, we've had enough time since that event in 97 to have tremendous regrowth of alder and willow along our creeks in Quartz Valley particularly. And this makes tremendously good habitat for beaver. And what we have right now is excellent beaver pond habitat all up and down Mill and Shackelford Creeks and good spawning areas at the lower end of the valley. And what this results in is good rearing habitat for coho salmon. And we are the kingpin coho salmon fishery in all of the Klamath Basin. And that's why there's so much interest in this particular area. But in fact, nature created it herself. The disturbance in 97, followed by enough time of regrowth of woody plants, provided the building materials for industrious beaver to create great protected habitat. Now, one link I just wanted to bring up is the management of Iron Gate Hatchery is abominable. The National Research Council in 2004 told them to quit, shut the hatchery down for at least 3 years to see what the predation effects are of all the fish they're planting there. Turns out, what we've learned recently, at a Tea Party meeting, you'll be pleased to know, generated by your interest out of Reading of coming up and getting a good Tea Party going here in Wairika, Frank Reitmeyer, 34-year employee with Fish and Game, spoke about 2 months ago at a Tea Party meeting there in Wairika and told us for at least the last 15 years they haven't planted a steelhead at Iron Gate. They're all rainbow trout. Well, we all know rainbow trout and steelhead are the same species, but one goes to the ocean. Fish and Game has been planting a very predatory salmonid in the name of rainbow trout to such an extent that they're probably eating all the coho fingerlings that are going out of this river every year. And now that we've got all these beaver dams in here, we're largely protected from rainbow trout depredation because they can't get through these beaver dams. The little guys can go up and get away from them and survive all summer like they must do. But the rainbow trout cannot eat them. We have a few of them cruising in these ponds, and we're hoping to get a variance from Fish and Game Commission to be able to fish those big trout out of there so the coho can survive. Fish and Game, until just recently, had a major program statewide, and it's been going on forever, of taking all beaver dams out. So we have lunatics in these
dams. Well, they have a thing about dams, don't they?
The biology and the ecology of the fishes are supposed to be knowing how to manage, and they are maintaining a low population by their management actions. And we have had enough of this kind of imbecile trained people. The state of California has not invested in their personnel to keep them up to date on knowledge. It's well known up and down the coast of all the way to Canada that beaver dam habitat is critical for coho. It wasn't until 6 months ago that Fish and Game was still promoting removal of beaver dams. These guys are out of date, and they need to walk out of here.
And so on that note, we're going to cut back to Mr. Dennison here and close this hour
out. Thank you, John.
But, John, we need to do a program on the coho salmon because that is an entire topic of its own. And all the things in the it's the politics of the coho salmon, actually, are what we should do the program on. And you're more than eminently qualified to speak to that issue. So thank you very much for calling in. And I'm sure we'll talk to you on another program here. Keep it going up there in Siskiyou County, because you guys are the spark for a lot of this. So much of it is happening up there. Bill, come back with us here. You are welcome. We've probably got a couple of minutes here, so we wanted to catch your final thoughts so we don't have a weird wrap up like we did last week, where basically you just cut us off.
Well, let me try to be concise. I would have liked to go on further in what Professor Benke is talking about. He's so right on, and we like to think that these atrocities are somewhere else when they're really all around us. But we do have to wrap it up, and I want to end with facts. The grassroots movements are easier to begin than they are to sustain. This enthusiasm is too often overcome by the amount of work involved and the number of committed leaders we have. So again, I commend you and others that have continued this work. But in summary, there's still much work and many reasons for those who enjoy our freedom to fight for our unalienable rights, private property rights, if you will, and it's stated by someone, I don't know who, quote, a freedom not defended is a freedom denied. Mm-hmm. And a battle's not going to become easier in the future. And that's why, Aaron and Elizabeth, I really believe, and I urge everyone to take the time to stand up for private property rights now. Get in there and help people like Professor Behnke. Go up and help them start a tea party there in the Wairika area. I'm surprised they don't have one now.
No, they do have one. That's what he was saying. I know it comes across funny when you guys are actually listening on the phone, but they do have a tea party up in Wairika, which is giving them a great platform to educate not only their local people, but all the rest of us, because we go up there almost every week and pull a great amount of information, take it down to the other groups, tell them about it, and then get those guys on the horn here with the radio and get the word out.
Good, and I'll be looking forward to hearing Professor Behnke on one of your shows. I think he'd be very valuable.
He is a super smart guy, and they have, they're actually, you know, he's not a guy who's living in a classroom. I mean, he's a guy who works the land, and so he knows this both scientifically and educationally and through his vocation.
And I wanted to, not to cut you off there, I'm sorry,
yeah,
Aaron.
We're in a minute. We're cutting everybody off.
Bye, Bill. Thank you, Bill. We're in a minute, so I just wanted to remind people to come to the Reading Tea Party, 6 o'clock every Monday night at Bonneville Baptist Church. Tomorrow night we have Senator LaMalfa, and we have Don Yost from the local ACLU. It's action-packed and lots of information, and that's a perfect way to get involved, folks. Come on out.
And if you're looking for a group someplace else, go to ReadingTeaParty.com, click on locations, find a spot near you. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM. We'll see you next week here on the home of Free Fire Media.